Welcome, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Architecture of Wealth. My name is Mark Struthers. I am your host, and I'm having a tough time getting settled this morning. I am without help, without an assistant. Thank you for joining us. The Architecture of Wealth, UCB Minnesota Nice Investor Goes to College. We originally started these for our clients and for employees on the employee wellness side of the business. The reason we changed formats was because we wanted to talk about more things that affected your financial well-being, and we wanted to give you tools for well-balanced wealth building. Today, I actually am highlighting an article from Barron's. The title of the article is The Bear Market, and I'm going to have it here in a second, How to Handle a Bear Market in Retirement. So I had nothing to do with this article. It's not my article. I'm not even quoted in it, but I like this topic. I thought it was something good to comment on. As you read through the article, the core of it has to do with luck. Luck in retirement. The luck being if you retire before a bad sequence of returns, meaning stocks and bonds, their returns aren't great. And unfortunately, if that sequence of returns, the bad ones, happen right after retirement, that's when it could really hurt you. If they happen later in retirement, chances are, especially if you've had any equities in the portfolio, they have grown large enough that if you stick to your withdrawal plan, that having that recession, stagflation later in retirement is not as impactful. Now, this article actually doesn't make reference to the 4% rule. But it does talk about, it does indirectly. So it mentions someone did a study, someone who retired in the year 2000, so 22 years ago, with $1 million, and they took out $40,000. Now, the 4% rule isn't 4% per year. It's 4% of the initial amount, in this case, $40,000, and you adjust that amount for inflation each year. And that's the key, to keep your standard of living, to adjust your withdrawals. And as this, it's the person who did this study, and I'll go and say it was, looks like Ritholtz Wealth Management. They said in the year 2020, they'd be left with $470,000. Now, not great. No one likes to see that. But keep in mind that the 4% rule was built around 30 years in retirement. So if someone was 65 when they retired in 2000, in the year 2020, they would be 85. For CFA, my math was a little off there. And keep in mind that $40,000 was adjusted for inflation each year. Well, and they don't actually go into the numbers of how they came up with those figures, but I was curious. If you scroll down through the article, and we're obviously going to have a link to the article here, they show you they didn't use the 4% rule. They used a 5% withdrawal. I don't know why they did something different. I think probably more for effect. So if you put the 5% annual withdrawals, and it doesn't mention whether it's 5% per year of the initial amount or 5% per year, but just by reversing those sequence of returns. From 2000 to 2010, remember 2010 was close to the bottom of the stock market, you had what some might call a lost decade, depending on where you calculate it, how you calculate it, if you subtract out inflation. So if you do total return, still not that bad. But not good. And then, of course, now you've had the recent downturn. So the point of the article is that just by pure luck, that if you retire before a nice sequence of returns, that's a lot better. So if you think about, I was curious, so I downloaded some data from our portfolio analysis software, Quanti. It's not the only thing we use, but clients tend to like some of the outputs. And they have indexes in there. They have 25 years worth of data. So I downloaded the S&P 500. That's what was used for the initial 4% rule study. Later on, folks like Kitsis, the additional studies that used some more common sense, more diversified, so international emerging markets, and actually bumped up to 4.7. And I tried to find where those numbers came from, because it doesn't actually tell you if it was all equities or not. It doesn't tell you what the allocation was for those returns. And Coanti had a 50% stock, which is S&P 500, and a 50% bond, a standard bond index as well. And I use that. And when I look at that, and you know, a lot depends on how when you do the withdrawal, how you calculate the returns. But with the 50%, it didn't make a ton of difference. The bottom line is, especially if you can carry it over to 2022, you were still in good shape. You had, and you know, depending on how you did it, even a little bit more than what you started with. And that's with that 40,000 growing to about 60,000 now, that withdrawal rate, once you adjusted it for inflation. That's pretty good. To get to that number, that 470,000, you would have had to have had a mostly equity portfolio, which very few people do going into retirement. So the main takeaway here is realize that a lot of this is luck. The biggest fear now, what people are afraid of, and understandably so, so retirees, now is a little bit of a scary time, is how you plan for retirement. People can talk about the 4% rule in abstract, but would you be okay at the age of 80 having your portfolio be down to $400,000 or less? And you're taking out that larger amount. You know, and that's a question that gets very personal. The 4% rule was built around not the Great Depression, but the late 60s to 80, where you had stagflation, where bond returns and stock returns were low. And they make reference of this in the article. They don't reference the 4% rule, but they talk about the fear now is that you have a lost decade. Having a COVID type situation, or like 1987, where things, or even 9/11, things crash, but then they bounce back right away. No one cares about that. I think you know, especially over even a year period of time, your withdrawals relative to what other growth you probably have, it's almost meaningless. But what the fear is that you do have a prolonged period of lower returns, and especially if you have any sort of inflation coming out, that's what most folks are afraid of. So this article does a really good job, and it even comments on some things that you can do about it. I think the most important thing a retiree can do is honestly just have a plan, start to put some thought into this. And I came up with my own list of things that you can do. Number one would be have more assets in retirement. You know, instead of the 4% rule, do the 3% rule. Now, keep in mind, and the article even shows this, by if you retire before a good period of time, you're going to have, and you stick to like a very conservative 3% rule, you're going to have a lot of, your probability is you're going to have a lot of assets in retirement just through a little bit of luck. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is that when you look at the Bengen study, which was the initial 4% rule study, it made very clear that having equity in your portfolio was important to get for those inflation adjustment returns, to get that growth so you could adjust the return for inflation. You know, if you go in with all bonds, inflation will destroy your purchasing power. You'll dwindle away those money. You might be more defined. You might know the outcome better. And if you die early, no harm, no foul, or you don't want to leave a legacy. But that's one thing to keep in mind, that some degrees of equity are important. But you could have one, you could have more assets. Two, you could be flexible. I think the article mentions this. If you are flexible around your spending, where if you do happen to retire before a bad downturn, a bad inflation stretch, could you cut those two vacations down to one? Could you buy a car every 15 years instead of every 7? Having that flexibility increases your probability of success. When we do financial plans, our financial plan software, we model that in. You know, depending on how complex it is, we'll, with the client right there in the office or more and more on a Zoom call, we're actually modeling in that and saying, yep, if we change these few things, we can increase your probability of success from 40% to 60% to 70% to 90%, whatever it is. One strategy that I like is to have a larger emergency fund. So, you know, granted, they talk about the lost decade in the article, and that's certainly a great fear. But most of these downturns, generally, your equities are getting back to even within 3 or 4 years, depending on what you're invested in. So having a larger emergency fund, and it's almost counterintuitive since we're talking about inflation, but having a larger allocation to bonds. And the article points out that bonds have been hurt less than stocks. Now, bonds were down 10%. It's just that we're ideally bonds act as a ballast. And that's the core of what their role is. Their role is not really to produce income, but it's to act as a ballast during these downturns. And especially if you combine it with an emergency fund, like we use fixed maturity date, either individual bonds or ETFs or something like it, to where we know that we can hold them to maturity. We know we're going to get a fixed income stream. The idea of having some shorter duration bonds, meaning they mature within, you know, 2 to 3, 4, 5 years, combined with an emergency fund, meaning for one thing, there's kind of like a comfort cash to, or cash like to say, we know that we don't have to touch those equities for 4 or 5 years. So the combination of those two things can be great. Having dividends and interest go to cash. Obviously, if you're more concerned about growth, you might want to use those dividend reinvestment plans, the DRIP plans. You might want to have those dividends reinvested and buying in, especially if the market's down. But if you have them going to cash, it's a way of rebalancing too. And that's when you rebalance your portfolio, keeping in mind your spending and using that as a way to rebalance as well. So having dividends and interest go to cash, and then reevaluating every quarter, every year, and saying, you know, do we want to reinvest these? Do we want to spend them? Where's the market at? Where's our spending at? You might get 5 years in retirement and find, you know what, we're not spending what we thought. Our healthcare costs are still low. You know, we want to reinvest these, or you know, we might want to. It's a different scenario if you're talking long-term care later in retirement. One thing suggested in the article is overweighting bonds early in retirement. And Kitsis is actually in this article as well. He makes reference to a bond tent. So from ages 50 to 65, you're increasing your bond allocation from 40% to 70. The assumption being is that you had the traditional 40% bond, 60% stock portfolio, which is very common, and that you increase that gradually, which I think can be a good idea at the age of 65. And then age 65, you decrease it. And you could do that if you're dealing with a down equity market. You could gradually decrease that bond allocation through spending. If you're taking out X amount, whatever it is, say $40,000 in our example, you could take that amount out of the bonds each year. So doing things like that can help you prepare. The best thing to do is certainly to model this out, to have a conversation, you know, with your advisor or with yourself and your spouse and say, you know, what might we spend? You know, and when I did my modeling, I downloaded actually the CPI data and I adjusted the spending each year, which can be helpful. But most people don't spend that way. They don't actually go out and say, oh, CPI is up 2% this year. I'm going to increase my spending 2%. It happens much more organically. So even kind of looking to say, where's the majority of the spending coming from? You know, do we think how severely do we want to adjust that for inflation? And take that into consideration. And if you're doing a Monte Carlo simulation, which is not perfect, you know, I think Kitsis says, I'd rather be somewhat right than for certain wrong. And forgive me for that. This quote, but I think you get the idea. So it is certainly a scary time. It seems like we're always saying this time is different. It's hard to believe that the next 10 or 15 years will be substantially worse than the late 60s to 80. So that 70s period, it's possible. But one thing to think about, even if it is worse, how much worse could it be? But if that is a fear of yours, you certainly can do some of these things. As mentioned, I really am a big fan of having that emergency fund, using some different types of bonds that you, maybe you could hold to maturity. You know, the cash flow. You know, one of the biggest fears that we have with some of these longer maturity bonds, and they still play a very crucial role for depressions. That duration risk that you have is what does really well those government bonds during a Great Depression. So that doesn't, that acts more of just more than just a ballast, because it can actually uplift your portfolio through capital gains. So doing, having some of that comfort cash, short duration stuff, I think adds a psychological, it's important for the client. It's one thing, and even actually Bengen was recently quoted that, you know, he doesn't have any evidence of this, but he's even concerned. He said, and kind of, he said it's more emotional. It's his words, I'm paraphrasing him as well. It's different when you're actually in retirement. When you're in retirement, it is really tough to put your faith behind something like a 4% rule, you know, but it is, it, but you have to have some degree of risk to get those inflation adjustments. You can't just put, you can't just clip coupons for 20 years and adjust for inflation. It doesn't work. So as you can tell, I love talking about this stuff. I love safe withdrawal rates in retirement. The article's there. Please subscribe and share. Thank you for joining us, and we will talk to you soon. Have a great summer, everybody.